This episode is brought to you by Affinity, a relationship intelligence platform that empowers teams to find, manage, and close high-quality deals. Find out why firms like Octopus Ventures, Dawn, and First Minute Capital choose Affinity at affinity.co. Networks are everything. Don't forget to mention you're a friend of Venture Europe when you chat to the team.
And before we introduce our next guest, we would like to give a shout out to our friends James and Hector from Riding Unicorns, who are doing an amazing job with their podcast, where they dive into the operational side of building tech unicorns through interviews with some of the best founders and investors in the venture space. You should check them out.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Venture Europe with me, Colleen Fabry. Our guest today is Eric Laguerre, founding partner at ByFounders. ByFounders is an early stage venture fund backed by a collective of some of the most accomplished founders from the Nordics. After 8 years in Silicon Valley, where he built an extensive network of investors and founders, Eric returned to Copenhagen to found ByFounders and support the next generation of globally ambitious founders building a better tomorrow. Eric has more than 20 years of operational experience in Silicon Valley and in Europe, was part of the early team at Skype and TradeShift, and he founded Memolane, which was later acquired by HP. During this episode, we discussed the journey to Silicon Valley with his startup Memolane, the importance of showing the ugly slide in a pitch deck, and we talk about his tattoo, Modita, meaning the pleasure that comes when seeing other people succeed. Please enjoy this wonderful conversation with Eric Laguerre, founding partner of ByFounders. Good morning, Eric. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing fine, thanks. And how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I would assume that you already biked to the office, you went for a swim in the ocean. I've heard that that's your morning routine.
Indeed, it's the best way to get to work. It's such a good way to just prepare the day while you are riding. And as I get out to the office, the harbor, the ocean just outside our window. So I jump into the ocean and get a dip. And, you know, it's pretty crisp this time of year, but it's a good way to get the blood circulating and getting me into the mood of yet another great day.
Absolutely. I start running every morning at 6 a.m. and doing a cold shower, and it's an absolute game changer. Are you doing that like for a long period? When did you start?
Yeah, so I started actually probably some 15 years ago of going into the ocean every morning. Then I moved to San Francisco or to Marin. And for 8 years, I couldn't do that. But I rode my bike from El Valle into San Francisco every day over Golden Gate Bridge, which was incredible. That was like a magic tour. I do miss that so much. And then as I moved back, I was able to pick up going into swimming again or dipping again. So that was really nice.
So you mentioned San Francisco. Like what brought you there?
Ooh, that's a... That's a long story. I've been very fortunate in life to have a number of incredible adventures. And I'm sure we can touch upon that here later around like early at Skype and early at TradeShift. But in 2010, which was at the hype of social media, I was like sitting and contemplating around like, you know, we are all more and more active on social media. We are active. We are using Instagram. We are using Facebook. We are using Twitter. We are using Yahoo. We're all at that time using MySpace, YouTube, and many other social media sites. There was actually a ton at that time. And we're posting all these moments. You know, here's what I'm doing now. This is what I'm doing together with my friends. Here's what I'm eating. Here's the movies I'm watching and so on. But where does it all go? And I felt that we were missing like a more permanent storage for all these moments to make it memories, and wanted to build a time machine for the web and allowing us to see, search and share all our greatest moments and memories, and that you could build these timelines with your family, with your friends or yourself, and connecting all the social media services that you were subscribing to or active on to formulate and built this beautiful timeline. So I went to this crazy event called Startup Weekend, which is basically a blind dating for wannabe entrepreneurs. And on a Friday, I was almost missing it because I was so busy with working at TradeShift at that time. But I decided to, you know, give it a go. I went there and I pitched the idea of Memolane. And there was like this audience, probably 100 people in the audience, and a lot of folks pitching different stories or ideas. And then there was like some voting about like which ones, and so on. And eventually, I think there was like 8 teams that over the weekend really worked on building various startups. We actually ended up winning. We won 10,000 Danish kroner, which was incredible. And with that, I went to London a few days later and met with my old colleagues from Skype, Janos and Niklas. They just launched Atomico. And I presented to them what we have built over the weekend and the ambition of creating this time machine for the web. And honestly, both Janos and Niklas was pretty excited about this. And they could see the fire in my eyes around like what we could build with this. They were very quick to lean forward and said they wanted to be part of that. And then given that this was all about social media and California and San Francisco was the hub for that, it was natural to also go over and venture over there. So I flew over to Silicon Valley. I started driving up and down Sand Hill Road, met with a number of incredible VCs, pitched the idea. And I was very, very fortunate to get in front of Howard Hardenbaum, who was one of the partners at August Capital, one of the most prestigious and longest lasting venture funds in Silicon Valley. They were the first backers of Microsoft and Cisco and many others. Howard really liked what we were up to, could see the potential, and he also reached out to Niklas from Atomico, and together they decided to lean forward and back me and my very, very, very small team. And so we raised $2 million on basically something we built over a weekend, which was pretty insane back in 2010. And with that, I went back to my team in Copenhagen and said, you know what, I think we are moving to San Francisco. Then I discussed that with my wife, looked at my 2 small kids, Emily and Isabel, that at that time was 8 and 10 years old, and said, like, how about it? Are you ready for an incredible adventure? And, you know, for some strange reason, my wife said, absolutely, let's do it. And with that, we packed our bags. We packed 8 suitcases because that was basically, we could have 2 suitcases each for a family of 4 and with SAS. And then we flew over and we started our lives in Mill Valley, just outside San Francisco, and ended up living there for 8 years. So it was a long story, but what led us into San Francisco and experiencing an incredible adventure of a tech boom that was like amazing in San Francisco and Silicon Valley.
That's a beautiful story. I still think today that we need something like an external memory. From time to time, I kind of wonder like, what was I doing last year or 2 years ago? You know, I was in Norway, but I don't really have like a clear grasp on it. And I think the older we get, the more we tend to forget the longer in time it goes. So still that doesn't exist. And if we think that in the future we could have a type of external memory, you know, to kind of augment experiences, I think it's a great idea. I think Google Photos tries to do something similar, but I don't think it's on par with what a product like that can achieve. And
exactly.
And after you moved there, I know that also you worked on a company and then Memolane got acquired.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've had both like some incredible like wow experiences with Memolane, and we had some incredible shit experiences with Memolane. So I would say the first wow experience was really when we went to San Francisco and we launched Memolane. It was announced on TechCrunch and we just saw like our website barely, like it was almost breaking down because there was such an influx of users and we just got incredible feedback from an audience. The reception was incredible and I got to speak with Jason Calacanis. I got to speak with some incredible innovators in Silicon Valley that endorsed what we were doing. The not so great moment was around noon on September 17th in 2011, when suddenly my phone and every type of connectivity I had, my email, my text messages, everything just went off the hook. Because Mark Zuckerberg went up on stage at F8, which is their annual event. And he said, you know, with all these moments that we have, wouldn't it be great that we could create a place like a timeline where we could gather everything in one place? And you could basically hear one-to-one, everything he was pitching was a ripoff of Memolane. To the extent also that for those who are on Facebook, when you receive this, hey, here's what you did 5 years ago, And it actually brings back that memory. That was like one of our key engagement features that we had. And it was just interesting how, you know, they picked up and leveraged all of that, what we have built. Obviously, 80% of our users came from Facebook, and we could from the get-go see that it was a pretty uphill battle to continue what we were doing when the majority of users were being more and more activated by Facebook. So that was another like a wow moment. Not so good, but that's what happens. And we then had some really good conversations with a number of companies that liked what we were building, the technology we had, such as Google and Twitter and Facebook as well. But we ended up selling the company to HP. They had at that time a division called Snapfish, was the biggest print division in the world for photo books. And they could see that our memo lane, together with printing photo books, like if we just put a button on the memo lane, that could be a great opportunity to further monetize memo lane and to further increase the demand for photo books. So yeah, we eventually landed on our feet, and maybe not the adventure that we all had dreamt of, but you know, no regrets. It was incredible time, and we got opportunity to play hard in Silicon Valley.
What did you decide to do next? And this was like a journey for what, like two years or?
4 years, basically. I ended up investing 4 years with Memolane. And yeah, so we stayed around in Marin. My family had ventured in and really adopted to the California vibe, which was nice. But one of the things that I was really reflecting on was some of the hardships of being an entrepreneur from the Nordics, the challenges of making it big. Like, and as an example, I raised money from Atomico and from August Capital. But also when I look at the founders of Skype and the founders of Zendesk or Unity or Tradeshift or Sitecore, all of them that I know very well, there was like really one notion is like all the unicorns eventually, they were not able to raise any capital from Danish or Nordic investors. And it was like there was a common denominator, which was against all odds. There was no capital and nobody had tried it before. So that really sparked my idea around like, how can we help the next generation of founders? How can we really make a fundamental change for them? And not only come with capital, but also come with operational guidance. So I started chatting with my neighbor who I'd been helping from time to time and so on, Heine Sagriesen from Vivino, about this, and got a really good reception from him around this. And then I started chatting with some of the founders from Zendesk and from Unity, and David Helgerson, Morten Primdale, Lars Flew from Sitecore, and Nicholas from Skype. And I said, you know, I'm thinking of really creating a four founders by founders fund with an outset in the new Nordics, as we call it, the Nordics and Baltics, to really help founders that are thinking global from day one, are super ambitious, and where we can put them and help them on some of the journeys that we've been part of ourselves. And with that, the whole idea of ByFounders was created. I was very fortunate that I could convince Tommy Andersen, who's a very experienced founder from Denmark, to join on this journey. And we set up ByFounders. The project started in 2016, and we started writing our first checks in 2017 when we launched a fund, Ambition, 100 million euro fund, and investing early stage, pre-seed and seed stage.
That's a wonderful founding story, and it kind of seemed very natural, just kind of seeing the gap, almost very entrepreneurial. It's almost like a company. You see the gap and you try to build a company,
sure.
You find like your co-founder and they're like, okay, let's do this. You talk with people that are experienced in the market. So tell me more, what do you guys invest in?
Like obviously we have a pretty in-depth investment thesis and process and scope, but I would say at the core, what we invest in is what I've written on a blog post called Passion, Love, and the Ugly Slide. And I think that really reflects on where we come from as founders ourselves. We are looking for other founders that has the passion to build something big. We are looking for products that people love. So founders that are building, passionate founders that are building products that people really love. And then we are always asking for the ugly slide. And that's it's something we coined because we think that the relationship between founders and investors are sometimes broken and it's not transparent. And for us, we have a motto, I'd rather be honest than nice. And we see that when we meet with founders and they come in fully ready to pitch and, you know, punch their best way and showing all the great things, that's great. But when we ask them the question, what keeps them up at night? What's their ugly slide? We get them to reflect about some of the things that they're worried about and what they are struggling with. So it's really, it gets them to reflect around like how we can help them as well. We call it the free get out of jail card. It's like their opportunity to say, yeah, we know that commercially it will be difficult to monetize, or we know that the currently our acquisition cost is probably going to be a little bit too high versus the lifetime value. What can we do to address that? Or, you know, I'm not exactly sure I've yet built the correct team, and how I extend that team. All these conversations are so natural for us, and it opens up for a conversation that is so much more profound and where we actually can talk about how we can add value. Because trust me, for all the hardship, all the challenges any founder is experiencing, we've been there before with what we built with ByFounders and this very strong collective of founders that we have that's all associated with our fund. And I can come back to that another time. It's not something that's new to us, but building that rapport and communication between founders and us is so valuable. And we often turn down founders because they are not genuinely honest to us. Because when we ask them about the ugly slide and they said, hey, there's nothing, we will deem two things. They're either ignorant because they simply don't understand their own business, or they're lying. And if there's two reasons why we would never invest in a founder, is founder they are ignorant or founders that are lying. We much rather have that we have a transparent communication between us and where we really can help each other.
I think we just found a title for this episode, The Ugly Slide.
Fantastic.
I remember actually when I got to interact with ByFounders and I was talking with some entrepreneurs, and it was just amazing to see how well the collective actually works. A lot of funds say that we have a collective and we have these LPs and they're going to help, or there's all this knowledge transfer. But I remember a lot of entrepreneurs saying that, yeah, I've talked with ByFounders and they connected me, for example, like with Heini, just to talk about community. How do you build community? Because they're good.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very interesting win-win situation that happens both for you as a fund, but also both for maybe entrepreneurs that might angel invest. So it's very interesting how you brought that together.
No, we are like every day very fortunate that some of the most accomplished founders from across the new Nordics have decided to lean in, pay forward, and sign a pledge with us to help the next generation of founders and really showing great compassion around the founders that we engage with. It's so powerful when we are meeting with new founders that we can say, hey, you know, you should definitely speak with Heine from Vivino, or with Johan from Kahoot, or you should speak with Mean Doctor, or you should speak with, Jeppe from Pleo, or Yannick from Public, or Mac from Comsor, or Mass from Calm, and so on. It's just like incredible energy that's unraveled in a very short period of time when we can like get these great minds together. And it's definitely something that allows us to punch above our weight. We are just a small fund. We are only a 100 million euro fund. We are on our second fund now. And still, I think we can actually often deliver much more value than you will see some of the like very, very well institutionalized VCs are doing. And that, I think, is a unique differentiator for us, and which is why, you know, we coin ourselves as the community-powered venture fund in the new Nordics. And the community is that collective that we have.
Beautiful. Well done. Well done. Just to change gears a little bit and get personal, what's a decision you regret making?
I would say like there's two answers to this, right? One is, I think being a founder, being an entrepreneur, you will continuously have to make decisions, and many of them will be wrong. That's just a fact. You know, if you don't make decisions, you are not taking initiative. You are simply not like an entrepreneur. You just need to be able to own up to the decisions you make, and also embrace when you are making stupid decisions and go out and rectify that. And I for sure do that, you know, continuously, because it's just like, as you get things done, you also make a ton of decisions, and some of them are unfortunately wrong. But I would say the biggest decision or the one thing that I regret the most is that for many, many years, I always made my decision with my brain. When I finished high school, I did military service. I served as a platoon leader. I afterwards went to business school. I afterwards went to management consulting. I went to corporate strategy. I went into corporate life. And it was first when I heard about Skype and was what Janos and Niklas were building that I suddenly found that I moved my decision process from my brain to my heart. And I got like passionately excited about what they were building. And at that time, I was 35. So fairly late in life, I realized the importance of making decisions with your heart. And from then on, I really tried to calibrate my decision process to always be where I'm level set around, like, this is really what I truly believe in and not what others would say is the right thing. And hence, I can just see that since I joined Skype, I've never looked back. I've never regretted any of the decisions I made. It's just always been like an incredible venture that I'm on.
And tell me about someone that had an impact on your career.
I met many amazing people that absolutely have inspired me. But I think the biggest impact and a reflection I have, and it maybe sound like cheesy and so on, but I think it's my wife. The fact that we've now been married for 22 years. We've been together since 93. And she's always supported me and never doubted me. And always, like when I said we should move to San Francisco, she said, yes, let's pack our bags. Having this type of life partner that has your back, and the family we've now built together, and my two daughters, Isabel and Emily, the way they encourage me to continue pushing forward, that is like the biggest impact. I'm super grateful every day that I have such a good setting. I'm very, very fortunate.
What's her name?
Chloe.
Chloe. Shout out to Chloe. What does success mean to you, Eric?
Oh, that's such a good question. And for long, and maybe even before I joined Skype, it was all like, you know, my mind was, success must be, you know, becoming a millionaire and you know, all these type of things. What I think really I learned, especially as I moved to San Francisco, I was very amazed by so many, as I launched Memolane, that reached out and said, hey, how can I help? How can I make a difference? And there were so many generous people, and just Howard Hardenbaum, one of the investors, really always was going above and beyond helping me on my journey with Memolane. And I asked him once about, like, what is it that drives you? And he said, it's mudita. And I was like, what is mudita? And he told me a word that I lifted up everything for me. And mudita is all about getting pleasure in seeing other people succeed. And when I heard that, and when I reflect about my own life, it suddenly dawned on me that that is really the driving force for me in success, is if I can help others to be successful, that is happiness. It's to an extent where when I turned 50, I got my tattoo here. So when I greet people, it says mudita. What's interesting is, and I tend to say that to people, I'm sure everybody knows what schadenfreude is, or skadeglädje in Swedish, or skadefuld in Danish, is around, like, you know, you get pleasure in seeing other people fail. We all know that word. We all know what that is, right? Isn't it incredible that there's not a word in our culture that is like, hey, I'm getting pleasure in seeing other people succeed. Like, we need to look into Buddhism to find that word. And it's like we have a word for microwave and for, you know, iPad and for any type of thing. We don't have a simple word that says, I get pleasure in seeing other people succeed. So yeah. That is really my key to success, is mudita.
That is beautiful. I would argue that we don't have a lot of words for a lot of feelings and positive feelings. I think we have a lot of words for technology, and I think we're moving very, very fast. We can split the atom, but emotionally, we're maybe not as evolved as we could be as a human being. And that's why maybe it's a little bit like normal and primitive to be happy when someone else is not doing as well.
Indeed.
I know that you have to run in a bit, so I'll just jump to the question. If Eric from, let's say, 20 years ago would listen to this episode, what would you tell him?
I really encourage anyone, and also Eric 20 years ago, to live life, right? Jump into it, embrace it, capture the opportunities that are around. You only live once, and it's important that you really make sure that you don't afterwards regret that you went into, you know, projects or jobs or anything where, yes, your mindset, that's the right thing, but you are not there with your heart. Mm-hmm. I can just see that anyone where I meet folks, and I envy people that at the early age, when they are 15 or 16 or something, whatever, they find out, for example, they love playing music and they go for that career. You know, that passion of finding something that they really love doing is the key thing for success in life.
For a life worth lived, do something that you're passionate and what you love. Wonderful.
Yes.
Eric, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a real pleasure to hear your story and to hear the motivation. I think you're doing an amazing job in the Nordics. So well done. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.